Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Nick Purden. He is a South African poet whose first collection of poems, The Rose-Shaped Heart, has recently been published by Modern History Press as part of its World Voices series. Nick's poems are intimate reflections upon battles with depression, addiction, and grief, a journey through a personal war into enlightenment and release. We're going to delve into Nick's personal life, his addictions, and how he was able to get to the other side. I'm hoping that my chat with Nick today will, if you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, will find inspiration in what he has to say. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Well, this is great talking to you, and especially that you're calling us on Skype all the way from South Africa. It's not too often that we get people to talk to from South Africa, so this is a real pleasure for me.
Well, for me too, yeah.
This is quite a book that you have written, and it really goes into some of your darkest times, darkest nights of soul, as I guess we could refer to. And I would like you to just tell our listening audience a little about the poetry that is in this book.
It started off around about 2003. I was writing a few poems, nothing really serious, and I ended up meeting an artist and an ex-university lecturer who sort of inspired me to get my poetry out there. And I was in a pretty dark space at the time, and I was drinking a lot and going through all sorts of depressive phases and things like that. And I found that writing about it was a sort of a relief. It gave me a sort of a focus for the feelings I was feeling at the time.
Nick, when you wrote some of this poetry, you were still drinking, is that correct?
Yeah, I was.
Okay.
I was.
And so let's just talk a little bit about the alcohol addiction that you had. At what age do you, now looking back, do you feel that you became addicted to alcohol?
Well, I was around about age 19. I had finished school and the year before, and I was sort of lost. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And by the time I got to 18, and the legal drinking age in South Africa is 18, so I started going to clubs and bars and pubs and things like that. And the easy access of alcohol made it easy, obviously, to get hold of it, and then I found that it was a way to escape dark feelings like loneliness and sorrow and all that. So it started around about then, yeah.
Well, it's sort of the same story that many people that are addicted to alcohol, it really does suppress a lot of feelings, doesn't it?
It does. The problem is when... It's kind of a double-edged sword, because when you get horribly drunk, you end up with a lot of ugly feelings that start coming out, and it makes you aggressive and angry, especially at yourself. I used to do all sorts of things to myself when I was drunk. You know, I'd get really angry, and it's like the alcohol took a lid off what was holding all the negativity inside me, and once I was drunk, it was released, and
mm-hmm.
I'd lose my temper over little things, and it was like I needed to punish myself somehow, and so my self abuse sort of ended up like coming out as burning myself with cigarettes and stabbing myself in the arm with a pair of scissors, that kind of thing, and just being aggressive and belligerent. I mean, I wasn't a very happy drunk, put it that way. So.
Yes, and you know, there are, like you say, not a happy drunk. There are drunks that are like what you had experienced, but also there are others that are extreme opposite, aren't they? They're, you know, they're funny and they just
have
a different role, that is for sure. So just looking back on this, Nick, you know, you say that you really started drinking excessively at the age of 18, 19. That was the legal age, but... Was this something that was also accessible in your home? Do you have alcoholism that's been passed down as an imprint through the generations?
There have been people, not my immediate family, not my mom and my dad were not heavy drinkers at all. But I know my grandfather was, I think there's perhaps a gene that came through somewhere. Or I'm not really sure how much I believe is genetic and how much is just personal choice.
Yeah. So why did you start drinking and suppressing the feelings in the first place? What was really going on in your life at that time?
Well, it actually started around about 17, not the drinking, but sort of depressive feelings, and I felt very lost and rudderless. You know, I wasn't really interested in the future. I don't know, it was kind of strange. I felt like I didn't fit in. I didn't want what other people seemed to settle for in life. And I also had another little thing, sort of an attraction to, or I kind of saw things like depression and suicide and things like that as kind of a glamorous thing. My favorite poets and my favorite musicians were strung out people who sort of made a tragic life seem glamorous, and I thought, well, maybe I'll go for that then, because I seem to do the whole misery thing quite well. So that was part of it. Yeah.
So as age 17, you're a teen going to school. How much of this did your parents, what were they aware of? Were they really aware that you are depressed and not motivated, or didn't fit in? Were they aware? Were you able to really suppress that from them as well?
I was very good at hiding it for quite a while. My mom did suffer from depression at times and anxiety, and I sort of also felt like I didn't have any reason to feel depressed. It wasn't like anything had ever happened to me, that, an external event or anything like that. It was just all very internal. And I kept it hidden until I was about 21, I think, yeah, where I finally did actually talk to my mom in particular about it. And I went to see the psychiatrist that she had been seeing, and I was put on antidepressants, but it's like I didn't want to let go of the drinking. You know, I was having sort of too much fun going to pubs and shooting pool until the early hours of the morning, and I wasn't really ready to really commit to actually wanting to be a healthy person inside.
Nick, you had mentioned earlier that some of these poems that you had written were from the time that your darkest, place. So I would like you to read one of those poems to us.
Okay. I'm going to read one that was written a little bit further on in 2003, but the whole time from 2003 until 2 years ago was pretty dark, so
yeah,
it's kind of applicable. This one's called Withdrawal.
Uh-huh.
As the dark clouds roll in, heaving, they bring decaying ravens plummeting from a sky of cracked bones. Black spears of leaf pierce and tear my eyes from their sockets. A nerve hole with dull blue irises that stare around as blank as silence. Blood thickened with ice, an itch of splintered glass, strips my body parts and places each on 28 stakes. The scavengers perch and gorge themselves hungrily.
Wow. What was going on at that time?
Well, at that time, a bit further on, around about 2005, I started using heroin.
Uh-huh.
And this poem is basically heroin withdrawal, what I was going through at the time. And I've been through withdrawal a few times, so it's, for me, it pretty much sums up the experience of of having to go through heroin withdrawal.
So you graduated, obviously, from alcohol to hard drugs, heroin. That's a pretty extreme opposite, isn't it?
Well, what had happened was over the years of drinking, one of the things with alcohol is that your judgment seems to disappear. It makes it easier to get involved in other things that you probably shouldn't or otherwise wouldn't. Before I started using heroin, I was smoking marijuana, and I'd used cocaine and crack occasionally. I hadn't actually gotten hooked on anything, but there was a sort of a progression, and the sort of self-destructive tendencies snowballed, and by the time I started using heroin, it was by that stage pretty much easy to make that jump. It was just wasn't really even a jump. It was just a slide, and yeah, but
heroin is a very abusive to the body drug, and it takes a toll on the body. And I'm wondering how long it took you once you quit using heroin to really get your body back into some normalcy.
Well, yeah, it does. It ruins the body. It just destroys the immune system, and you lose weight. At one point, I weighed about 48 kilograms, which is, I don't know, I think that's just over 100 pounds.
Yeah.
As my heroin addiction grew, I ended up losing everything and ended up on the streets. So I was basically a street junkie, and I looked a street junkie. The stereotypical look I had it, and I ended up getting involved in things like shoplifting to support my habit, and getting in trouble with the law, and ending up in and out of prison on sort of awaiting trial side a few weeks at a time. The magistrate, the judge, sort of thought that might wake me up a bit, and then I kept appearing in front of him, and eventually he sentenced me to 4 months, which prison anywhere in the world is no fun, especially if you're recovering or trying to recover, and you go through withdrawals in prison. It's pretty heavy, and I found it took the actual withdrawal symptoms took almost 6 weeks to work themselves out, and even then I suffered really bad insomnia. And even now sometimes I struggle with my sleep 2 years on, two years clean. So it takes a toll on the body and the brain. It takes a long time, if ever, for the chemicals in the brain to act themselves.
Yeah, you made a real good point, if ever. How do you feel about that, knowing that your body may never go back to what it really should be at this point because of all the abuse of the heroin, and, of course, it started with alcohol and just escalated to heroin. So how do you feel about that, knowing that because of your past actions, it's possible that your body may never restore itself?
I do think about it sometimes, but I've sort of accepted the fact that that consequences of my actions are probably going to stay with me for the rest of my life, and I've actually come to accept that now. And it's not really terribly bad. I mean, there are nights where I struggle quite badly to sleep, but it's not so bad that it really interferes with my daily life, usually, anyway.
Yeah.
But I think part of getting clean and staying clean is accepting that there are serious consequences to your actions, and getting in trouble with the law. I have a prison record, and that makes things like getting a job credit and things like that a lot more difficult, and that's the way it is, and I have to just deal with that as best I can, because beating myself up about it isn't going to change the past. And
yeah.
And I the only thing I feel I can do is try and look forward. Yeah.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with author Nick Purden. He is the author of The Road-Shaped Heart. As you've heard so far, Nick is really willing to talk about his own struggles and dark nights of the soul. Stay tuned, because there's so much more. We are about to find out how he was able to get sober and stay clean for the past 2 years. By the way, Nick's website address is nickpurden.com. Well, certainly, you know, what I'm hearing, too, is at one point you made that decision, and we have this adage that says something like, you know, this is the first day of the rest of my life. And it's that shift that happens, and I'm hearing that that really didn't happen to you.
Yeah.
How about another poem?
Okay, well, before I read this one, I should just point out that after I came out, I came out of prison in October 2009. In February 2010, my mom was diagnosed with terminal cancer. Uh-huh. And we had always been close, but we were sort of estranged for a while I was using, and we managed to mend our bridges when I cleaned up. And then obviously her getting very sick was a very stressful time, but I'm very thankful that I did get clean and I didn't end up staying in prison when she was sick, that I actually got to spend some good time with her. So I wrote this poem. It's called Scattering Your Ashes at Cork Bay, which is a seaside suburb of Cape Town where I live, and a place that she did like and wanted her ashes scattered into the sea. So this is from my mom, Janice. I'm heavy over the rocky outcrop for the weight of my heart, but you are light in my palm and through my fingers, as though you filtered like time through an hourglass, lighter now than even the mild winter air, sky, and sea that had called us out today to blame you with it. And what gifts has the fire left for the blue? Your bones are powdered, mine are broken, a bag of stars and shells to replace the body. And from my hand I seem to have tethered a spirit to heaven's cradle, a scatter of distances from womb to horizon. Grief beads and drips into a rock pool at my feet. I feel I have lost a jewel among the seafaring and abalone. Here we keep our silence close to our chests, burrowing deep within us, as heavier as God. But you are light now, lighter than even the song, time after time, whispering from the Harbour House restaurant, as we clamber in our armor back up to the path, yellowed by the flowering freesias.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Thanks. Wow. Very poignant. Very poignant. So, you were in a recovery for several years before your mother's bout with cancer and her death. Were you?
It was a few months, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, this was not very long after your abstinence from, you know, any of the substances that were using, alcohol and heroin, which was the last one, and all of a sudden this a death happens and there's grief and sorrow. And what was happening to you? I mean, you know, you must have been walking a very fine line as to which way you were going to go. Are you going to abstain from using all those substances, or would you go back? It's a struggle within you.
Well, there was a strange kind of a shift that happened when I was in prison. Like, I don't really want to call it a religious experience, because I don't think it was. It was just something like a light turned on, and I started thinking about writing poetry and actually getting it out and being a published poet and making something of myself. And I felt when I got out I was clean for a few months already, I felt like the addiction and all the past, the years before, were necessary for some sort of growth in me. And it was obviously very extremely difficult to watch my mom go through an illness like that, because it really does just eat the body up. And I think it took the focus off me to feel something for someone else, to have the focus on somebody else's serious problem. I don't know. It's really hard to explain, but I just felt like I could get through it, and that I could make her proud of me. And I mean, there were difficult times, obviously, especially after she passed. And then a few other things started to happen after that. When I got offered this publishing contract for the Roadshow part, that sort of fueled me to carry on on a straight clean path. And I also felt like for me to go back and start using again, it was almost like it felt like to do that would be such a betrayal to my mom's memory that I couldn't seriously think about it.
Some people would call that spiritual awakening.
Well, I think that's pretty much what I had. That's why I sort of tried to stay away from the term religious experience. But so it was something like that.
So tell me what was that point? That immediate point. It's like, okay, this is it. No more heroin. No more alcohol. I am getting clean, and I am going to stay clean. What was that moment like?
It came from a very, very, very dark place, lying on my prison bed, actually thinking about, I was contemplating taking my own life in there, because I thought, when I get out of here, where am I going to go? I've broken bridges and trust with my family. I need help, but who's going to help me? I'm just going to end up back on the streets again and then back in prison and repeat the whole cycle. So I was seriously thinking about just, you know, ending it. And the other strange thing that started happening was going to the library there in prison and reading books that seemed to be just meant for me to read. I was reading about 4 or 5 novels a week, and they were stories of triumph over serious adversity, and stories of heroes and things like inspirational things that, or at least were inspirational to me, and felt like I was meant to read them. And I felt like I could also write my own story like that and live with honor and nobility, because I'd always seen nobility as dying young, you know, taking lots of drugs, writing a few good poems, and and dying young. And that was my concept of nobility at the time. And the shift happened in prison, where it became like, no, that's not nobility at all. Nobility is having been there and been as low as you can go, and then crawling yourself out of there and actually making something of yourself. And especially, a lot of people told me I had writing talent, and I just felt like I was squandering it, and I felt that that was also like betraying myself. And or I can just say, I suppose, that I just got really tired of living on the streets and got tired of using heroin, so and I didn't want any more. So yeah.
That, so you've been clean now for 2 years?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Now, and also, you have, from all this experience, we'll call it, in quotation marks, you have now taken a career in the whole addiction system.
Yeah. I've started training as an addiction counselor. It's something I did think about also when I was in prison was, you know, what if I could get clean, stay clean, and then help other people who are on the same path and kind of show them that it didn't have to be this way, and that if you really want to, you can come back from the brink. And I felt like I wanted to be a light for other people. And then as I sort of, I had it in the back of my mind, but I thought, well, I probably need to stay clean for a while, and you know, and at the right time, I'll make an effort to look into that. And at the beginning of this year, I decided, yeah, this is the time to do it. I like to think of them as signs, I guess. I started seeing other people who had also been involved in drugs, who are now published authors and run their own private practices now after many years of being clean. So I saw an interview with someone on TV, and I thought, yeah, I think I should start getting involved in this. So I'm busy with training and hopefully, well, my ultimate aim is to have my own private practice as a counselor or as an addiction therapist.
Great. Nick, your website address.
It's www.nickpurden.com.
That's N-I-C-K. P as in Peter, URDON.com. Great.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow, thanks, Nick. This has been very insightful, and I know that our listening audience are just contemplating their own lives, I'm sure. And, you know, it thrills me to be able to talk to someone that was, you know, at a young age and not that long ago went through all these addictions and, you know, ended up using heroin and on the streets and in prison, but was able to make some huge shift in actually relatively short time and get clean, get sober, and stay. And then now, what you're doing is you're taking training so that you can help others that are possibly using the same path as you chose to.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be this way. That's my motto.
It sure does.
Yeah.
Does it? Thank you. Thank you again. And I wish you luck and in your counseling training. And I know that because of your background and experience that you have already, it is a breeze for you, I'm sure. And I can see you becoming a way sure for many others. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Irene. Thanks for having me.
And this is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening.